Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Radio Edu Talk. I'm John Johnson. I'm sitting in my house in Glasgow at the moment. I'm joined, as usual, by David Noble, who I imagine is in his home in Dalgety Bay. You may be listening to this live at edutalk.cc and then hit the Radio Edu Talk tab, or you may be listening to it on the podcast. We're delighted tonight to have Louise Jones join us today. Louise is ICT Curriculum Liaison Officer for Hineland Council, and she's going to be talking about social networking guidance for professionals, something that she's been working on for quite a while. Maybe you could just give us a wee bit of background to start with, Louise, about where you've come from, where you've been, your educational experience and things.
Okay. Okay, is that really smooth going?
Yeah, you just go. All this is going out onto the interweb live, we hope.
Right now. Okay,
right now.
Excellent. And firstly, just to say thank you to you guys for inviting me to speak this evening. You're in your homes, I'm in my home. I'm in just outside Aviemore, and it's a lovely evening here in the Cairngorms. A little bit of background. Well, I've actually been in my new post, which is ICT Curriculum Liaison Manager, since December. And my role is a lovely mix of looking at issues on the ground at the moment with ICT and firefighting some of the problems that we've got, but also developing a strategy and a vision for ICT. And I'm really lucky to have a fantastic group of colleagues around me, and we're working very much together in partnership with agencies around us to take that forward. But prior to that, I actually have been in Hineland for just over 7 years, and my role was actually health promoting schools manager, and my job officially was to make sure that the schools are health promoting schools, but then very much develop health and wellbeing resources. And it was probably in about 2006-2007 when I became involved in the Scottish Learning Festival, and I attended a teach meet, one of the very, very early ones, absolutely blown away, and sort of really made the link between health and wellbeing and the health and wellbeing aspects of online communities. And I saw a fantastic potential for the benefits of belonging to online communities and the impact that can have on us and our sense of belonging, which to me is a really important aspect, probably one of the most important aspects in keeping safe and well and healthy, but also the potential for negative impacts and the damage that can be done to yourself in terms of self-identity and self-esteem and mental health of when things go wrong. And I also felt, and I've always been a geek myself, that combining the sort of newer aspects of health and wellbeing and
Well, we seem to have lost the Louise and David. It's David calling back, so here we go. Hi, David. We seem to lose everybody there. I think folk are back. Louise, are you still there? Skype's just flipped out of us again. We're not having a good Skype night tonight. Here we go. Hi, David. Louise, can you hear me? Well, I can see in the Skype window both of these folk, and I can hear nothing. Yeah. And one more time. Here we go. And again, I can hear me. I can't hear David.
I'm not sure whether I'm live or not. Maybe someone can tweet me and let me know.
Right, yeah. Hi Louise, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. I haven't. I can just. I've just seen a tweet from Derek. He's just said that he can tune in, and he's heard us for a few minutes there. But yeah, going back to the safety work, if I can just sort of tell you a bit about where we are now with RE safety work.
Yep.
The guidance that we produced and we launched in December last year was a complete revamp of social networking guidance that we produced a few years ago. And looking back at the first lot of guidance we produced, it's quite embarrassing. It was very much around, don't befriend pupils and keep your profiles private and those kinds of things. And I think we've just moved on leaps and bounds since then. So we completely revamped our guidance and issued it in December to try and be balanced, reflect the importance of professional networks, and come from a perspective of balance and a sensible approach as opposed to the kind of guidance that was being issued at the time. And it was very hot in the media that certain kind of professional organisations, SSTA was saying, you know, teachers shouldn't have Facebook accounts and these kinds of things.
And again?
We issued that in December, and you can access the guidance on www.highlandysafety.wordpress.com. And it's been really well received. We've had lots of approaches from other authorities to use it. So, you know, certainly we're happy for anyone to use it. So if anyone's listening and wants to access it, they can go and have a look at the website and download it.
Yep. I mean, it looks quite a considerable amount of work that sits in there, and I think it's really positive that you're using social media to put that out and sharing it with all the rest of us.
Yeah, thank you. I think when we've been doing training since, we have quite a mixed approach to our training. We have regular sort of CPD days in the calendar, and that includes the CEOP kind of half-day training, and we've extended it. We've kind of made it our own. So you do actually get the kind of CEOP certificate and the Think You Know access. As a Think You Know trainer to the CEOP resources. But we also kind of extended it, and actually I did do a little mind map of all of the aspects of our training courses, and I'm really happy to treat that. It's an open access mind map, and I'll put that up in the Twitter in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
But it certainly covers a lot more, and particularly we look at the use of social networking for professionals. And the whole perspective of our guidance is actually belonging to an online community can have overwhelming positive benefits. Being part of a group where you can belong, share your thoughts and ideas and express yourself is very important, because it not only enhances your teaching, learning and practice, but, you know, you feel like you're making a valid contribution. And we know, particularly in Highland, if you look at our geography, we've got people that are in far-flung places, sometimes feel quite isolated. We've got teachers that are single teaching heads of very, very small primary schools. It's really important that they know that they can access online communities where they can continue to contribute and feel valued, as well as hear what else is going on. And I think that, you know, the current GLOW platform was meant to be a way of encouraging that, but you know, I think we can't underestimate the importance of people developing their own kind of environments, whether it's their own blog or whether it's their own wiki site, and we should never stop encouraging people from expressing themselves to their audiences. And I think that's a really important part, and it's something we would encourage young people to do, but certainly we should be encouraging professionals to do that too.
Louise, it's David Noble here. Just got a couple of questions. Before I ask them, maybe say if anybody's listening to the live stream, then they can get in touch with ourselves. That's including Louise. If you've got any comments or questions, then you can send an email to EduTalk. That's just send an email to EduTalk, and that's edutalkr@hotmail.co.uk. Or if you're on Twitter, if you just include the hashtag EduTalk. If you would like to actually phone in and speak to Louise live, then if you just send me an email or a tweet, then we'll be able to arrange to bring you into the conversation. Louise, I'm wondering, you've spoken about these kind of new guidance and advice for staff in Highland. Can you pick out what the main dangers are in your eyes, or you know, what the main pointers are that have been put across to the professionals that you work with? I know it can be hard to boil it down to just a few points, but you've obviously kept this up to date and you know, maybe looked at what's out there in terms of the research and other publications, maybe internationally. So what's actually coming out there? What are the messages that you're trying to get across, for example, during these CPD events?
Yeah, I'm still pretty shocked by the myths that are out there in terms of, well, if I put my privacy settings on, then that's my safeguard. And that's a real myth that we're trying to kind of bust, if you like. And what we're saying is that really you should be making sure that you're only posting material, whether it's something you like, something you post, whether it's a picture or a video clip or a statement. Just think about it, because as soon as you post it, it's going to be out with your control, no matter how private you think your privacy settings are. So you should, privacy settings are not there as a safeguard for inappropriate behaviour, or, you know, to really safeguard your information. And I think that's the bit we want to get across, is that don't rely on privacy settings. However, you can develop online communities with your friends, with your family, if you really want to use online media systems to be able to do that. But use something like PASS. We've been playing with PASS quite a bit, and I think that that's a really good example where you've got a very small kind of network. The maximum amount of people you can have is 50, and you can share things with those 50, but then you can also make the decision whether you want to put that post to your Facebook or your Twitter. So it almost acts as a kind of buffer, so you can still have that close contact with your friends and your family. It's just that some of the bigger social networks, and Facebook has become pretty ubiquitous at the moment, it's not fit for purpose anymore, and that's the problem. So I think what we're trying to say to people is, if you're going to use, you know, the bigger social networks, really consider what you post. Don't rely on privacy settings. And sorry, someone has just sent me a tweet saying, stop plugging PASS. But I think it's quite a...
Oh, and we lost Louise again. It must be because she's been mentioning PATH. I'd be really interested in hearing a wee bit more about it in a minute. There's David phoning back.
Posting or liking Louise, or whatever, with a complete stranger.
Louise, sorry.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, I don't actually know, Louise, because we get cut off again, then I get dropped out of the conversation. So the last thing I heard was somebody has tweeted you to say, Don't plug PATH anymore. So I'm guessing what you need to do now is plug PATH a wee bit, or explain why you use it, because I say I missed the next bit of the conversation, and so did
the
listeners.
It's just that I think the problem is that people still think that they can do whatever they like within their online community, whether it's Facebook, and because they've got the profile set to private, that means that they're safe in doing that. And what we're saying is, you know, you should always be acting in a way with whatever you post that you wouldn't mind a complete stranger knowing that information. And that's why we say, think about it before you post it. If it's a statement about what you're doing, where you are, a picture, a video clip, just think about what that says about you, and would you be happy to, you know, hand that out to a complete stranger? Because as soon as you post it, it's going to be out with your control, because the people that are your friends are not bound by any set of confidentiality agreements or rules. So just remember that. And I think as what I was saying was that sort of Facebook's not fit for purpose for what it was originally because of the explosion of kind of the way it's used as an authentication service and a marketing tool for businesses, and that we need to remind people of that, because a lot of people still are treating it as though it's still their sort of personal network, but of course it's just so much bigger than that now. So I would recommend using something like Path if you wanted to still be able to use an online system where you can share with your close friends and your family, but then that acts as a precursor to then post it onto your Facebook, that kind of thing, or your Twitter. So I would still make a distinction between the personal network and a professional network. It's just that the networks that we used to have that we would have considered more personal have grown beyond all recognition, and we should recognise that. The other thing that I just want people to be really, really mindful of, particularly about using images, and just recognising that whenever you take images now with a smartphone, Android, iPhone, or even a lot of digital cameras now, it's going to have your metadata in it of where that picture was taken. And it's something that can be disabled so easily. And I think that people are maybe not realising that if they're uploading a picture to Twitter, then it might have location data. So although you as a professional might be taking pictures of a young person, and then you'll upload that to school website, be wary that that might contain metadata. So all of our guidance is not about preventing people from doing anything. It's just about saying these are some of the things you might want to consider, because we want to keep people safe.
It's funny because the location data is one of the things I just really love about photos, because it helps you tell a story with them, because you can put them on a map and place them, and I think as long as you're aware of what you're doing.
I've been playing around heaps these last few weeks with Google Latitude, and I absolutely think it's brilliant. And as you all know, I do a lot of running and long distance running, and it's a really nice way of people being able to track where I am on my run, so they can have my drop bags ready for me. But what a wonderful way of telling a story. And I think that that's it. We should really be saying to people whenever we deliver any training of this sort, is that think about the benefits, think about the positives. Okay, we know now about location, so give me the positive times that you would use this. When can it be really, really useful? And then the times when it might not be useful, and the times to be able to make the differentiation between the two.
Yeah, well, I think I 100% agree with you there. I always tell people, certainly when they're talking about the internet, if you put it on Facebook or anything else, you should only put things that you'd be willing to print on a t-shirt and wear walking down the high street. Because somebody can see it, somebody can screenshot it. It's nothing's private. So if you just think of the internet and all these private services as public spaces, I don't think you can go wrong. You just know that somebody else is going to be looking at it, you know.
Yeah, the other thing that we're really making sure people are aware of, and I know that it's a pain, but, you know, and we say this to young people all the time, and it's a really silly saying, but we say, you know, treat your password like your toothbrush. That is, you would never share them and change them often. And we're really trying to encourage a culture of people being very safe about their passwords, not using things that are identifiable by the things that they like, or, you know, things that can be identified from their profiles. But the amount of people that do share passwords, or just think, oh, well, they can't access Glow, I'll share my password with them, you know, or something like that. I'm not saying that they do, I'm just giving you an example. But we really need to maintain a culture where people are looking after their passwords and treating them in that way. We've had quite a few incidents, and we know that young people, you know, are always talking about their Facebooks being hacked. So logging off, and not sharing passwords is another point. And it seems so commonsensical. That's a word, but it sometimes just people need to be reminded of it.
Yeah.
Louise, I'm wondering how you are or intend to go about keeping the advice fresh and up to date. I mean, I know that you've been involved and you link closely with the work of CEOP. I'm also interested as to whether you've looked at what's happening internationally or maybe in other professions, and finally whether you've considered, you know, the advice in the GTC code of code of professional conduct, I think it's called now, or whether you've needed to expand in what's contained there with relation to the internet and social media.
To be honest, I don't think we have referred, obviously, to the GTCS code of conduct. And if you look at the guidance that we've issued, one of the points that we make is that what would happen if you saw a young person at risk of harm, because as a professional you hold a position of trust and you're expected to maintain that in accordance with standards of your professional body. And that's one of the arguments for not befriending young people online. If you see young people getting online or in the community and you know, see that at 1 o'clock in the morning that they are having a bad day, or you know, they're having a difficult time, do you have responsibility to intervene? So there's those aspects of it. And I think, you know, we expect people to maintain the standards of their professional bodies at all times anyway, and that applies to the code of conduct. But that actually equates back to the issue around privacy, and privacy settings are not a safeguard for inappropriate behaviour. We should be encouraging, you know, appropriate behaviour all the time. And I remember a long time ago, Twitter was always compared to a giant staff room, and you could sit in Twitter and you could talk about, you know, what was happening at school overnight. I couldn't think of a more wrong notion or idea to place on Twitter. It's not a big staff room where you can say what you like. We know that staff rooms are a place of support, but, you know, we still need to be careful. Of course, you need to be careful what you say in staff rooms, but I don't think you can make the comparison between the two. And certainly, I wouldn't want anyone to feel that they have the same kind of safeguards they would in a small staff room as they would on Twitter, that's for sure. But certainly, in terms of kind of GTCS, it's probably I'm just looking at some of our paperwork that I've got here. It's not so much the code of conduct, it's a standard for registration that I would probably be more interested in. And I think that one of the aspects of what we're trying to do in Ireland is to look at the notion of digital literacy and the importance of being able to use a range of teaching strategies, a range of resources, and that includes ICT. And we expect people to be enhancing their competences in terms of ICT in line with the standards of registration, and along with those standards that includes our own interpretation, which is about using them safely and responsibly. So that's kind of where I would link in to sort of professional standards, that's for sure.
Thinking about professionals, I'm just wondering, earlier on you mentioned that you've been rolling out this training in the Highlands, a mixture of CEOPs and your own things, and I just wondered, it's a really big region, it's well spread, it's long distances involved, and what sort of participation levels are you managing in these training things?
Yeah, well, we're trying to sort of a one-day course every couple of months, and invariably they're booked up. We get a sort of 20 to 25 people, and I think that's a good number to work with on those one-day courses. And I've kept a log of what we've done over the last 4 years, and we've got something like 350 to 400 people that have been through those courses. So that's the sort of standard two times, but then we also do bespoke events as well, where if you book us, we will come, and to quote Wayne's World, we will go and turn up, whether it's a private provider, whether it's, you know, a public or a voluntary organisation. If you book us, we will go and provide a bespoke event. So we've been along to conferences. You know that I've spoken nationally at, you know, some of the conferences that have been provided by Education Scotland. But certainly, like local care homes, they've asked us to go in and provide training for staff, lots and lots of engagement with parents and early years groups and breakfast clubs. So there's a team of us, and we've got our e-safety group, and we will go out and deliver those training opportunities. But the other, which is fairly new, is that you'll remember a few years ago, most authorities had got by mentors. They've kind of had their day, really. We use the term Glow Mentor now, and certainly we would want people to be mentoring ICT in a whole range of kind of aspects of ICT and competencies. So what we're doing now in Highland is we're recruiting 58, which is two per associated school group, to professionals, and their titles will be CAT coaches, which stands for Curriculum and Technology, and they'll be based locally, and they'll be able to provide local training around the kind of competencies that I talked about. And one of those competencies or entitlements will be about digital literacy. So that's another way, and amongst other things like information security and being able to use interactive whiteboard provision, and being able to, you know, search online effectively and use other tools, whether it's blogs and wikis, some of those kinds of things. So they'll have a whole range of kind of sort of training aspects, and we want to make sure that digital literacy is a key part of that. And that, again, leads back to the sort of competencies and the standards before registration. So I guess, you know, to answer your question, we've had to provide a mix, which is local, bespoke events, and of course we've got our blog as well, and we try and keep you know, useful information on the blog. But the problem, if you ask me, the biggest problem with our training is that every time we do it, we have to update it. Yeah. Someone who does the training now is going to get version 226 or whatever against, you know, version 200 that they would have had, you know, sort of like a year ago. So that's why we need our blog, and we need to kind of drip, keep feeding and developing our strategies as things change. And certainly, you know, the e-safety work. I'm going to try and see if I can just get onto my MindMeister now, and I'll share the training sort of map, if you like, that covers all of the things that we cover. I mean, certainly games-based learning and the kind of integration of Facebook and Twitter as a kind of authentication system, you know, things like that we would include now, as well as kind of metadata and all those kinds of things. Right, if I'm just about to go into my Twitter, and you're welcome to repost this. My tweets are protected, and I'm quite happy to, you know, talk about why I protect my tweets, because that's come up in a number of conversations. But if I just post that now, you'll be able to tell me whether you can see that or not.
I should be, because I can see your tweets. It may take a minute or two to come through.
Okay, so if I just put at John Johnston,
Or if you hash EduTalk, I don't know when your people will not see it if your tweets are protected. So
I tell you what, if I just do, I'll just put it up now. On mine, I won't put it against anyone because you can just see that, and then feel free to cut and paste and retweet. And then hopefully if people click on that link, it's an interactive wiki map, interactive MindMeister map, and it gives you all of the aspects that we would cover on our e-safety courses. So if you asked us to come and do a bespoke event, we would kind of look at doing you know, a sort of snapshot. The other big thing that we've been doing, and this is quite an exciting thing that we developed last year. It's called Becky's Room. And we have an event in Highland called Safe Highlander. And it's a multi-agency event, and it's for all P7 pupils in Highland. and we were asked to do a new safety slot. And basically, all the P7 pupils, over a course of 10 days, there's a few satellite events as well, come to Cameron Barracks in Inverness. And they spend the day there, or the morning, and they go around to each of the different sets provided by the different organisations. So there's a road safety one provided by the police, and you've got a car that hits a bollard, and they have to say where the bollard's going to be hit at the car going 30 miles an hour. And they always get it wrong, and the car hits a bollard, and it's the same way as a child. And then there's a proper big house that's been built, and they're in the house, and the house catches on fire. It's really interactive, really fun, really lovely learning messages all on aspects of safety. And we were asked to do an internet safety slot. Actually, it was me kind of banging my drum again, saying there needed to be e-safety in there. And we were given a garage, which was a real picky old garage, and we transformed it into Becky's room, which was this wonderful teenager's bedroom, and it even had a plate of toast and crumbs and some rubbish and a bed and a school jumper and a laptop on with High School Musical playing and Hello Kitty posters and rollerblading stuff, and she loved Pally Thistle and pictures of herself and fairy lights and even smelt nice. We sprayed perfume on it. And outside the room to the garage, we said to the pupils, now, I'm a real fan of cooperative learning, and we said to them, right, and now we're going to go into Becky's room, and we want you to be our detectives, and we want you to spot all the things you can about Becky, because she's run off and left her bedroom door wide open. So they came into the room with really loud music playing, stopped the music and reiterated their task, and they had 2 minutes. So they spent 2 minutes, and it was really, really kind of quite fun for them to sort of see all the things in the room, because we'd both borrowed and stolen from our own teenagers and friends' teenagers' bedrooms to create this set. And then we said to them after 2 minutes, so, you know, what can you tell us about Becky? And they told us all the things that they could tell, where she was going, sort of bored, where she was going that evening. And we said, well, would you be happy if someone to come into your bedroom? And they're like, no. And said, well, actually, we didn't even need to go into Becky's room to find out all this information, because Becky's put it all online. Mm. And we revealed this big profile that was blown up, which was actually given to us by CEOC. It was their jigsaw resource. And all the things that were in the room equated to what was online. And then we worked with them and said, you know, why do you think that this would be a bad idea? And then they all got a handout with how to keep themselves safe online. And actually, that was the really good, really good exercise, because they came up with so much more than we anticipated. You know, even things like, I don't know, not just the obvious things that were stalker related or, you know, inappropriate kind of attention from adults, but just all the other things about people knowing stuff about you. And you know, and it was really funny, they even brought out the eco aspects of leaving your laptops on and remembering to switch things off.
Yeah.
And it worked really well, and that was for 2,500 pupils, and we did that last year, and we're going to do it again this year. And we had the set actually last 7 minutes, so to do that 27 times a day over 10 days, which meant we had to do the script 270 times. Over 10 days, but it was a really, really good piece of planning. So there's, I think you can be really creative. And another a little bit which is quite funny as well, in some of the presentations that we've done, one of my colleagues who was co-presenting would say things like, oh, I was absolutely wasted last night, you're gonna have to forgive me, I really, you know, shouldn't be here today, and walk up to people and ask them if they were single, and, you know, just be really wild and inappropriate. And you could see people absolutely cringing with fear at a professional conference that someone could be so wildly inappropriate. And we'd actually created a fake Facebook profile. And then at the end of the conference, we said, did you think that Liz was being inappropriate? And they're going, oh, thank you so much for saying that. We just didn't know whether we should be reporting her or not. And I said, but actually, you know, a lot of people act like that online, and, you know, would you be happy if your child was being taught by someone who was saying those kinds of things about their behaviour? So, you know, I love having little things that really make people think, and some of it can seem so obvious, but it breaks the ice and gets people talking.
Louise, it's absolutely fast.
Shut up. Have you seen that now?
Yeah, I'm looking at it just now, Louise. Yeah, it's great. And if you don't mind, it's something that I'll take with me to my own workplace. But can I follow on from that, though? I'm wondering, you know, are there any safety courses out there that, you know, you would recommend either within the broad general education up to the end of Phase 3, for example, or indeed courses that are certificated by the SQA or others?
There are some SQA courses that are e-learning courses. I really feel that for young people, active learning methods, and I've alluded to cooperative learning, I love cooperative learning, where people have different roles and you can devise things, and I think you can do that with any particular topic, but it works really well for e-safety work because, you know, it needs that discussion and sharing and kind of a safe group environment. So I kind of would struggle to see how you would do that on an online module because I think, you know, particularly from aspects personal care, we always have to assume that someone in that group has been affected by one of those issues, or maybe more have been affected by certain issues. So I think there needs to be an element of care and child protection involved if people want to disclose, or you need to make them feel safe. So I do know there's an SQA course. I mean, the SEOP training team are providing training courses as well. I think Respect Me, the cyberbullying, the bullying charity in Scotland do provide courses on aspects of e-safety, particularly around bullying online, which is something else I'd like to mention if I've got time. So I don't think there's any sort of particular certificated courses for professionals, but we're more than happy to share our resources if people want to see our training structures, and I've put, you know, that online now. And we're always happy to share some of our resources as well.
That's fantastic. And when this audio goes up on edutalk.cc, be able to put some kind of key links underneath the play button for listeners to access at any time. I'm wondering, we're maybe coming into the last few minutes of tonight's show, and if anybody who's listening to the live stream wishes to get in touch with a comment or question for Louise, then just email edutalk@hopemail.co.uk or put something up on Twitter, include the hashtag edutalk, then we'll be able to cover that before the end of tonight's show. My final question, Louise, is just to come back maybe to mobile phones, and you spoke about the topic tonight is social networking and advice for professionals, and you've touched on the use of smartphones, but is there general advice that you've worked on or within Highland Council about the use of phones and smartphones in the workplace? Is it bundled with the advice on social media, or does it sit separate? And again, would you regard it as up to date advice?
I think I have put a little bit in there. I think you need to be aware that if you are going to be using, your own device, just firstly think about how you're connecting to any networks. I think, you know, people need to be really mindful, whether it's iPads or mobile devices. And I try and not just use a spam mobiles. I think, you know, we can not recognise other devices, whether it's, you know, other sort of Kindles or whatever, but particularly devices that connect to the networks, just be careful about those. But also just be wary of what you're doing online and kind of timestamps as well. Remember, you know, you're setting a professional example as well. I think, if you're putting stuff onto networks that you think might be private, remember that timestamps and those kinds of things, you might be identified as being somewhere where you might be doing something else. I think we have to be a bit careful in terms of kind of, you know, being seen to be using mobile devices when maybe we should be doing other things as well. It's quite amusing, actually. Our youth groups have taken a stance against a bus driver who was using his mobile phone the day whilst he was driving, and actually got an apology back from the bus company. So I think, you know, people are recognising when it's an appropriate time to use your phone and when it's not. But certainly, you know, from our perspective, we try not to make the differentiation between sort of mobiles and other devices, and you know, people need to just be wary of when they're using them, and how other people are viewing how they're using them as well.
Maybe just to veer off a wee bit, Louise, I wonder, have you any influence on the filtering in the Highlands? And maybe can you tell us, are social networks available in school in the Highlands?
Facebook is available for staff on our networks for professionals. We've got different sort of levels of filtering.
Yep.
So certainly YouTube is accessible for professionals in its entirety, and Facebook's accessible for professionals in its entirety, but then it would be blocked for the pupils, so that's kind of the sort of filtering access around Facebook at the moment. We are working towards a devolved filtering system where schools themselves will be able to unblock sites. That's in the pipeline, and they'll be able to unblock websites at source. At the moment, they would send a request for a site to be unblocked. I think that YouTube/education has been quite helpful in being able to, you know, work more closely with professionals, because YouTube/education is unblocked for pupils. But the YouTube in its entirety, for example, is accessible by staff. So if they did find a link that was inaccessible for pupils and they still found that that needed to be unblocked, then they could make sure that they sent it through to governance and that would be unblocked. And that is not a quick process. It's not as quick as we would like, but the pipeline, the works are in the pipeline to make sure that people can unblock at source and be able to do that a lot quicker, because it's recognised that, who knows, when you're teaching, that someone says, oh, I know a good website, you know, no matter how much you plan, we believe in active learning methods and flexibility, and, you know, you can never, you know, have a whitelist and a blacklist, because you don't know what you want to search for until you're there, do you?
Yeah.
So I think we're trying to make sure that we're making access a bit quicker and to unblock sites if they're needed, but professionals can access Facebook. Guest devices is something we're still yet to kind of fully explore. We've got some pilots in the pipeline for Wi-Fi access for guest devices, mm-hmm. and so the writing's on the wall. We're moving in the right direction, but also, and this is something else that I've become more acutely aware of in my new role, and that's the protection of information, personal sensitive data, and also as an authority we could be charged with huge fines, as other local authorities have done, if people information, personal information gets lost. And we have a responsibility to protect the information and personal data of our clients and customers and pupils, and that has to come first. And I don't think, you know, I wouldn't ever think that people would purposely do things. I think you can accidentally do things that can weaken those systems. And we need to make sure that we're putting in place safeguards to protect our staff and pupils. That's the most important thing.
Yeah, the data protection seems to... Yeah, it certainly did. I mean, the data protection thing seems to be biting quite a few local authorities at the moment.
Yeah.
And it's a hard one, I think, especially for teachers who are maybe struggling with IT in the first place, and then they've got to add on another layer of complexity.
Yeah, and also we know that technology obviously gives us much greater kind of cloud-based server solutions, and when you're on the go, and, you know, talking about mobile access again, you know, if people are using an iPhone to access, or other phones are available, you know, to access cloud-based storage systems, whether it's Dropbox, SkyDrive, MyDrive, any of those, then it's, you know, I don't think anyone for a minute thinks that people are doing anything purposely, but if you downloaded a document and then your phone was stolen, you know, then and somebody's identifiable by that, then that's when people are going to get in trouble. And we don't, we just want to make sure that people are safe and our data is safe as well.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a great Dropbox fan, but the same as social networking, I wouldn't put anything in Dropbox that I wouldn't pass out on a handout or give away to strangers, you know, because...
That's a really good point. Can I mention, and I've only got a few minutes left, is that I just wanted to mention my teacher. It's one of those things that kind of rears its head every now and then, and our previous advice on Rate My Teacher is somewhat out of date, and our previous advice on Rate My Teacher was that you could actually request for something to be removed by flagging it. Our experience of late is that they won't remove anything. You might as well be pressing a button that doesn't work. The actual organisation are not removing anything, and we run a cyberbullying service in Highland, and it's there to support anybody who has been targeted by behaviours that cause them concern, and that can be a pupil, it can be a member of staff, it can be anybody. We're happy to help. But where Rate My Teacher is concerned, we're not able to intervene and get things removed. The site are not doing that. So our advice is more about support. I've checked with Education Scotland, I've checked with TESS, I've checked with Teacher Support Scotland, and the advice is don't look. Don't look.
Yeah, it's just going to upset you.
And that's it. And I think that there are complexities around, if you see something about another member of staff, then do you tell that member of staff? And I think that that's a tricky one, because if you do see something about another member of staff, and if I was that member of staff, would you want to know that the other person knows? So that is another sort of twist in the sort of Rate My Teacher scenario. But, our advice now is to think about your own safety and security and what systems have you got in place to look after your staff, health and well-being, because Rate My Teacher could be shut down more than there'd be something else pop up in its place. Yeah. And there are other sites which are, along the same vein, whether it's Formspring, or there's another one which is where you can comment on anybody, whether it's a teacher, a mum or a dad or a doctor or whatever, I can't remember the name of it. And it's a difficult kind of double-edged sword. So do you want to raise awareness of sites like this and say, these are out there, do look after yourself, because when you raise awareness of it, you actually then maybe encourage people to go and have a look at themselves.
Yeah.
But also I want to make sure that, people feel safe and secure and can deal with things and know that the things that might be on Rate My Teacher might be the things that were said in the playground behind people's backs or, whatever. And I think it's more the aspect of well-being that I'm more concerned about. And I know for a fact that people who maybe are having a bad day or have low self-esteem or maybe upset can sometimes search for evidence that kind of tends to corroborate how they're feeling about themselves, negative or positive, and it's a bit like pulling a thread on a jumper. We need to be putting, support in place for when people say something like that and not pay too much attention as distressing it might be to sites like this, because it seems to me at the moment there's very little we can do about it. But I have spoken to Education Scotland, and I have spoken to our LNCT, and I've raised it with the unions as well to see if they can do something nationally. But I'm sure that we're not the only other country, or the only country that's had a negative experience of Rate My Teacher.
Mm. Yeah, you don't know if it's a malicious thing, or it's maybe just a management issue, sort of. It's too many remove requests for them to be able to deal with. I don't know.
I don't know, but certainly our advice is now not applicable. You don't seem to be able to move yourself, but and having extensively consulted with national bodies, their advice is don't look, is a difficult one for me to say, really. I feel quite uncomfortable saying that. I wish there was more we could do, but there doesn't seem to be anything we can do at the moment about that, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. That's maybe not the most cheerful note to end on, but I suspect we should wrap this up. Can I just say thanks very much, Louise? I think that was pretty stimulating, anybody listening to it. There's lots of stuff to think about, lots of really good ideas. Your resources that you posted the links to will certainly include with the archive, because they're really valuable to everybody across Scotland and beyond. And also, I think folk have still, there's a few other things people can think about on this. If you do want to continue the conversation here, you can just tweet and use the hashtag edutalk, edutalk. If you like email, you can email edutalker, edutalkr, at hotmail.co.uk. You could leave a comment on edutalk.cc. I just need to really say again thanks to Louise for tonight. And next week, correct me if I'm wrong, David, I got it wrong.
No, you'll get it right.
I'll get it right this time. Fergal Kelly, who's a biology teacher in East Lothian, and also, I believe, was seconded for a while as Curriculum for Excellence Development in East Lothian, is going to be talking about his Masters in Education dissertation. Most people that are online in Scottish education will know Fergal well from his blog and from Pedigoo, which is a really interesting development, I think. So I'm looking forward to that one. And we hope you'll, if you've listened and enjoyed this, you'll maybe join us again next week. So again, thanks a lot, Louise, and hope to see you in the flesh sometime soon.
Yeah, that'd be lovely to see you both. It's been a long time. Maybe at Scotland Festival this year, I'm hoping to get down to there. But thank you for inviting me on this evening. It's been lovely to chat to you.
Thanks, Louise. We'll see you soon.
It's been
good. All right, take care. Thanks.
Bye.